don't need a man who's got it made. Always looking for that renegade. I calls it like I sees it. A spade is a spade. A good man is a thing of yesterday. Yeah.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I like that song.
Me too. Me too.
Who sings that? Do you know?
That is Curtis Holland Jr.
It's kind of fitting, you know, good man and chivalrous guys. That was good stuff.
I listened to it a couple times. It's on the, you know, the it's okay to use list. No copyrights. Won't be in fights with John Cougar.
You just talked about it. Yeah.
So I think. It might be in the running for our theme song. I like it.
It's a good one. Yeah, I like it too. Yeah.
So it goes right from saying a good man is hard to find, and then boom, two of them right there.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we're trying anyway, right?
We're trying. What else can you do?
That's it.
We're gonna do a little podcast on sales this morning.
We are. We both have a lot of experience in that field.
I've been selling since I was 19 years old. I know you started selling your body when you were 16, 17.
We're not supposed to talk about
right. We're recording. Sorry.
Right.
I'll edit that in post.
Edit that, yes.
So you can give us a definition?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's actually, it's somewhat obvious, but a good little spin at the end here. So sales refers to the exchange of a product, commodity, service, or delivery for money. It involves helping prospective clients or customers by listening to them and understanding their wants and needs to find them what they're looking for.
That blows my mind, Chris, because you know what? I've worked for dozens of companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they all spend thousands of dollars on these mission statements and that. And it's right there in the Webster's Dictionary, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That should be sound to everybody in every company. This is what sales is. It's perfect.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. The whole bit about listening to them and understanding their wants and needs. And that really, I think that's what that essence of it really, isn't it?
It is. A lot of sales, I think, make it about themselves. And it really isn't. You gotta. I was taught years ago, the first one to speak loses, you know, you got to listen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know why just this moment, I just thought there was saying that, the customer is always right. I wouldn't necessarily say that, but the customer is always, you know, kind of has their opinion, and then you kind of just go along with that, right? So
I can't believe you said that, because I have said that for years, that I don't buy that. I changed it years ago to the customer needs to think he's always right. But
that makes a lot more sense. Yes.
But he is not always right. And I've told this, I deal with a lot of retail stores.
Yeah.
I've told them for years, like it went too far with this customer's always right. And it used to be the Better Business Bureau used to protect consumers. I think we need a bureau to protect retailers, because customers abuse retailers something awful these days. It's something.
Yeah, no question. You know, and then there's that sort of, there's a gray area in there where by establishing or, you know, having that philosophy that the customer is always right, what happens in that is that if you as the retailer or the seller actually know more, you know about your products, then you're kind of diminishing that by allowing them to kind of lead it, you know, whereas really, and this is the thing with customers and everything else, like, you know, the understanding that you actually have more knowledge in this field, and that they can accept that and then listen to that, isn't always going to be the case, is it? That, you know, customer may think that they know, you know, more than they think they know, or, and so they kind of, you know, and it can sort of get to a point where you're like, I'm just not going to argue with you because it's not worth it. I don't want to create any conflict, but you almost take a step back and say, I know that I actually am right, but I'm going to let it go. So, you know,
we do
that's a
it.
Good
I do it every
right.
day. We do it. My watch, me and my customers do it with their customers every day.
Yeah.
Fortunately, there's a very old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And it's
yeah. Yeah.
People come
yeah.
in and they're willing to throw away all their pride and act
yeah.
like a child to
yeah.
cry and moan and go on Facebook and threaten. And
yeah.
people just
yeah.
go, you know what? I don't need this. I don't think you're right, but I just need you to go away. And
yeah.
but
yeah.
the big box stores,
yeah.
they've ruined it for a lot of people. A lot of these stores have these no question return policies, you
For
know,
sure, for sure.
and now everybody thinks that's what everybody should do. And it's just not the way it should be. I'm sorry.
Yeah, a friend of my brother's, I remember this was years ago. He worked for Mark's Work Warehouse and they had this policy on work boots. And if your work boots, you know, fell apart within a year, you'd get a free pair. Well, guys would wear them for 364 days. They'd just walk in, hand them the old work boots and get a new pair. Like, how are you running a business on this model? Like,
work boots for life.
It just becomes a completely disposable society where we're just like taking advantage of these you know, these loopholes.
My wife was assistant manager at Northern Reflections.
Yeah.
They had the same kind of policy. And this one
yeah.
woman would come in, she'd buy everything at Christmas, and then the next year she'd bring it all back, like worn, like socks. And they
yeah.
eventually had to say, I'm sorry, you can't come here anymore. And
yeah.
she lost her mind, but they had to ban her from the store because she was abusing them. It was
right.
Policy got changed. It just,
yeah.
And a lot of time it's the manufacturer, and I work for the manufacturer, so I sound like I'm on their side. They're
yeah.
not perfect.
Yeah.
I remember I worked for Gold Star, which turned into LG.
Yeah.
We made bread makers, and I'm talking about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
We dealt with the Bay, and the
okay.
Bay had a policy that you could bring anything back. So, but they would write the policy with us that we had to take everything back. So the
right.
Bay didn't take anything back. We did. And we just
right.
had bread makers pile. I used to sell them as refurbs. There was nothing wrong with half of them. People
right.
didn't know how to use bread makers. And they brought
right.
it back, and we had a bunch of dirty bread makers. You know,
right.
it was awful. But
yeah,
I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, I mean, I think in just this early part of the conversation that there are kind of a lot of more, you know, moral, philosophical, like there are a lot of you know, things that come up where you know, you're questioning policies for, you know, for the benefit of sales, but what is the bigger effect in that? Like, what is this disposable society that we live in, where people are just buying, 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 and all that stuff is just like going into landfills. And this kind of, I think it's gotten better. I think, you know, in the last number of years, there's a lot of like reselling, refurbishing, a lot of things. People are realizing that like this, just throwing everything out is so destructive.
Oh, it's ridiculous. We used to grandfather things in, like, you know, my grandfather would give my dad a sofa, and then I would get it when I got married, and I'd get a chair and a used bed, and I was so happy to have them, you know.
Yeah.
Nowadays kids want everything new. And
yeah,
Ashley's the biggest. I'm in the furniture mattress business. Ashley's the biggest by far. But
yeah.
their furniture, I mean, they almost say it that, you know, it'll last 5 years, you know, and we'll get it. You
yeah.
get it. It's cheap, it's beautiful, but it's,
yeah.
How many sofas are we going to throw in the landfill, man? Like,
yeah, I know.
Has the color changed, you know? Or,
yeah.
And you
yeah.
were talking about moral dilemmas. What about, we're the chivalrous guys, right? So what about,
yeah.
well, pride and chivalry and morals, like as a consumer, that,
yeah.
you don't just get to take it back because you don't like it anymore. If it's not broken, if there's no warranty claim, well, you know, that's it. Like, just accept the fact maybe buyer's remorse, you bought the wrong thing or you don't like it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just go in
yeah.
and act like a child and stamp your feet till you get what you want. Like, what about,
yeah.
do you have any pride or self-worth or anything? Like,
tricky. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be too judgy about it, but it is.
No, I do.
You can. You play devil's advocate, I'll advocate. But yeah, I guess, and for look, for many years, I actually know a guy who they do furniture refurbishing and upholstery and stuff. But it is like really becoming a dying breed. Like
Yes.
this few and far between that do that, like it's a real art form. Like it's not easy to do. And honestly, I mean, there are a percentage of people that see value in kind of older furniture and heirloom pieces that, you know, they've worn out. And so, but oftentimes it's twice as much as, you know, going to IKEA and buying a new couch, right? It's like it's expensive, right? And you're paying for this generational ability to do these things, but I think most people are just like, nah. I mean, and look, I'm not gonna bash IKEA. I have plenty of IKEA things around, but it is sort of this kind of like cheap and cheerful, hey, just buy it, give it for a few years, and then chuck it out.
Disposable world. My son moved. He had a bunch of IKEA stuff. He left it behind, bought stuff like my other son did it. And it's more expensive to move it than buy it new. Like, it's crazy when you think about that.
Yeah, and look, you mentioned the box stores earlier, and so I'll just like take that and run with it a little bit, because that was a major problem for us when I ran Schomburg Farm and Garden Supplies. We were a small, you know, kind of small business, local, what you'd call a mom and pop shop. Like it was Pa and Son, but same idea. We had a philosophy of selling quality, not necessarily over quantity, but selling quality at the end of the day. That was our kind of our philosophy and our motto. But when the box stores started to come, yeah, everything was kind of coming from China, started getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And, you know, people would come in and we'd sell high quality shovels, and you know, they were Canadian made. They were made in Quebec. You know, hardwood handles, forged metal steel blades. They were $50. But people were like, "Well, I can get a shovel at Home Depot for $16.95." I said, "Yeah, but it's crappy. Like it's not as good." And they would be like, "Well, you know, it was all about price, right?" So they would go, they'd buy the $16.95 shovel. 2, 3 weeks later, they'd be digging a hole, they'd snap the handle, and that was it, right? And they'd come back and they'd be like, "Yeah, you were right." Like at least, you know, some of them would say that. Many of them would probably just go buy another one. And I think we talked about this before, because oh no, you know, I was talking to a customer about it, and you know what he said to me? Cheap is expensive.
He's right. I never looked at
Right?
it that way, but it's true. It's true.
Think about that. You know,
Absolutely.
you buy the $59.95 shovel, and this is just a microcosm of a macrocosm, you know, conversation. You buy the $59.95 shovel, you're pretty much gonna have it for life. Like that
For
blade,
sure.
like we never gonna break. The handle might, but we sold replacement handles. You could put a new handle in it for $14.95, $10.95, whatever it was. But the reality is most people would just go out and buy that other shovel 10 more times in their life. And where are you with that?
And
It's like cheap and expensive. That philosophy, that is
it's
like,
got a
I thought that
shovel
was so
sitting
good.
in the landfill, and it's Canadians. I'm sorry, I know it's a world economy, but we are Canadians, and there's Canadians building that you're supporting, and they're supporting Canadian families.
Absolutely.
The trickle-down effect is mind-boggling, mind-boggling.
It is. It is. And I think, and again, look, I'm not trying to take some kind of political stand against China right now, but like we all know morally, there are major things that they're doing wrong there. Like we know that there are young kids working in factories, and we like it's real. It's not, I'm
No,
not
it's
making
real.
this up.
No.
And yet you know, if you go to the dollar store, you know, these stores, and again, look, I'm not gonna bash the dollar store. There is some value for people that don't have money, but the vast majority of this stuff that comes to the stores is trash.
It's garbage.
It's like,
And people go
so
in with 30 bucks and they come out with bags. Look what I got. And I'm like, yeah, you won't remember any of it in a week. Like, no.
no, and it, yeah, and you know, and I think this again, going back to the moral and philosophical kind of values of being in sales, is I don't think when I was in retail, I couldn't sell stuff that I couldn't get behind. I really couldn't. You know, if somebody told me today that you need to work for this window company, and then you started like looking into this company's reviews, and everybody's like, shit windows, all these guys, this is terrible. I could not morally work for them. I would not be able to go out and sell a product that I don't believe in. And that is, I mean, I don't know whether I think that that, you know, that would come a little bit more with age. Maybe when you're younger, you would do it because you really just needed the money. But I feel like inherently, like inside us, we're all like, we're going, this doesn't feel right. There's something wrong with this.
No.
And, you know, I think somebody maybe that's early on in sales or they're thinking about a sales career, I think that's something you really got to take a hard look at, because if you can stand behind the product and feel confident, you're going to do a whole lot better at it, obviously.
And you don't have to lie.
Like, exactly. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right?
You never get caught in a lie. You never,
no.
Because I've been fortunate. I've worked for many companies. I believed in 90% of them. The one I didn't work for.
Yeah.
My main company for most of my adult life has been Kingsdown. And I worked for Kingsdown for a bit. I mean, Kingsdown's quality is second to none.
100%. 100%.
Mike James and Hugh Owen before Mike James and with Mike James and Sneed. I mean, they.
Yeah.
I mean, if that line isn't straight on that product, and if that coil and that foam, and we always have the best 100%. Everything. It's, and I'm not here trying to promote Kingsdown. I'm just saying, like, it's unbelievable. Like,
yeah, it wasn't a hard product to sell. It wasn't hard to sell. I mean, we're both going to say, you know, there were maybe a few bets here and there where you're like, okay. But, you know, I mean, that again became a function of the rest of the industry. People were going lower and lower and lower and lower in price. And it's like, you know, you kind of got to play the game in a way. But, you know, I think in general, and again, we don't, you know, get too detailed here, but it was a quality company where we were selling really quality. And then we pushed the envelope, I feel like, to the other end where we were selling, like, you know, $20,000 mattresses that were like the bomb. Like, they were like amazing, incredible products, right? And the attention to detail was always there. And, you know, maybe that didn't necessarily mean anything to everyone, but I think as salesmen, and, you know, it meant something to us, and people that knew, you know, what made a quality mattress, they could see it. And that was a great thing, for sure.
And Mike went over to China, and he had partners around the whole world, Germany and Australia. And so he didn't just buy from somebody not knowing how the factory was run. He made sure these factories were good factories. They treated their people right. They were
absolutely legit. Absolutely.
It's been wonderful. I sold IMG chairs. I pioneered that down in the Maritimes through another friend of mine who was doing it in Canada. Mm-hmm. These were like Nordic style, like stressless style chairs. They were
I know those. Yeah.
They were worth, you know, these were $2,000 recliners.
Yeah.
$2,500 recliners. And I remember I put one in the back of a truck, me and Carl, and we started hitting every store. And they had to be bought in containers, which were $80,000 worth of goods. And we thought, okay, let's go just see if we can make a couple waves and see what people think.
Yeah.
We hit every store in Atlantic Canada that we wanted to hit. We sold every store. Like, we were out in the back of their parking lot with a chair. And Carl taught me a lot, because Carl showed me that it's not a little expensive if you show the value. So if you say it's $2,000, that's expensive. Yes, but it has cold core poured foam, and it has steel frames, and it's liquid this, and it's this poundage of this, and it's this type of leather, and it does this, and it swivels, and it rocks, and it reclines, and it's all of a sudden like, that's not expensive. But for everything it is, it's unbelievable. It's ergonomically correct. Your elbows fall in the right spot. I mean, I loved selling those. And the retail salespeople could tell how much I believed in them, and then they believed in them, and then they sold. It was unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. And that's certainly not the kind of chair you're likely to throw in the landfill ever. Right.
No. I've got two right there, and I love them.
It you know, it brings up, I think, a good next segue in that, you know, the value of you believing in it as a salesman, as an experienced salesman, goes a long way. But they're like, from the get-go, when you drive up with that chair in your van, you need to sell it. You need to sell it. And there's got to be a trust in that. Like, you know, there are obviously details to it that you can specifically explain. But at the end of the day, like, they're all hidden away. Like, you know, nobody's going to cut that chair open and go, "Oh, I just want to confirm that this." So they need to believe you, right? They need to trust you.
Well, that
And
goes. I'm glad you brought that up, Chris. Don't mean to interrupt you, but
yeah,
that
no
goes
problem.
back to, I mean, there really isn't any order how we're talking. I kind of had a thought, but I like when it goes like this. But
Yeah.
I built my sales career, and if I had any advice to young salespeople, it's
Yeah.
about relationships, relationships,
100%. It said it
relationships.
right in the definition there, right?
Right. And it takes a while. You don't, it
Yeah.
doesn't happen. And I started in this business working for my dad, and he had some relationships, but you know what? All dad did was introduce me to people. If they
Yeah.
hadn't trusted me, wasn't because I was his son. They had to believe in me. And I
Yeah.
got them to trust me. And
Yeah.
exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
I remember one buyer, I won't say his name, but I walked, he was a major buyer down here. And he said to me one day, I was showing him something and he bought some. I said, "Well, thanks. It's a new line." He goes, "Well, Sean, if you're selling it, I'm buying it. Now, if it doesn't resell or if I
Yeah.
lied, he won't
Yeah.
buy it again." But he
Yeah.
trusted me enough that if I was sitting in front of his desk and told him this was a good thing to buy, he would give it.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that's because I'd sold myself a long time ago and he believed,
Yeah.
he
Yeah.
trusted me. So that I had a Seymour Pamatov. I don't know if he's even still alive. I met him at South Shore when I was a kid. And
Say
he,
that name again.
Seymour Pamatov,
That's a
he was
quite a name.
this Jewish guy from Toronto. I loved him. He was a
Yeah.
salesman
Yeah.
and he grabbed me by my collar and I was just a kid. And he said, "I'm just going to tell you this, Sean." And he gave me some hints, which I took.
Yeah.
Sales, I had no problem taking people's advice.
Yeah.
He said, "I'll just tell you, Sean." He said, "A bad salesman will do a lot better with a good line than a good salesman will do with a bad line." And
Right.
that
That's a
always stuck with me,
good one.
that
Yeah.
you go out and get a good line and then you sell yourself with that good line.
Yeah.
I just started with bad lines. It wouldn't
Yeah.
have mattered about trust. I never would have gained it because
No, you didn't believe in it.
didn't believe it. I remember a salesman who I don't, another guy like me who I don't like, who travels. He was bringing all these lines from China, and I won't say the name of this one either, but
Please don't.
they were these cheap dining room sets,
Yeah.
and people couldn't believe the price. It was like, I don't know, $99 for four chairs and a table. Well,
Right.
they got a container of them. It was a box of parts.
Okay.
It was just like the spindles and the legs and the screws. It was all just thrown in a box. No. It was kindling. It was garbage. It was nothing, you know. Didn't sell it again.
And again, I mean, you know, going back to the IKEA example, like the reality is, of course, you have to assemble everything. But I would say that as a company, like they do, everything is recyclable now. Like they are 100% recyclable, and the quality is actually okay,
I
right?
like IKEA. I really
So,
do. Yeah.
but if we go back to the, you know, this. You know, this honesty thing and building relationships, because really that's what it's all about. You know, I've never taken a sales course in my life. Like, have you? Right. So I feel like
No, I have not.
I'm not saying there wouldn't be something advantageous to taking a course, but at the end of the day, it's about who you are, really, isn't it? It's about, you know, you need to believe in the product, but it's about communication. And little things like, you know, again, if we're talking to people here that are starting out, look, it's eye contact. It's shaking hands with eye contact. It's shaking hands well. It's like, you know, there are these little things that people that are in sales, they recognize it, right? I mean, you know, you may have a little bit of nervousness. Maybe they recognize that, but you can even just communicate, "Hey, look, this is new for me. I'm just trying to hear to listen to what you're looking for. I'm a little nervous because I don't really know you." Like, there's something that's really good about that kind of honesty. Like, don't pretend to be somebody you're not, right?
Absolutely.
Especially when you're starting out. I think, again, we've talked about it in past podcasts. I think one of the advantages that I had when it came to communication and maybe understanding people, because I think that's another big one. You're almost kind of like a psychiatrist while you're out there, or a therapist, because you need to understand that everybody's going to be a little different with the way they interact with you. We traveled a lot, as you know. When I was younger, I was put in situations where I moved from Los Angeles to Germany. I went to school with a 13 kids on a US Air Force base. I didn't know anybody. We moved there. I didn't know a single person, but I had to kind of adapt. I had to be able to communicate. I had to like make friends quickly. I had to like, do these things. And I feel like that really helped build a strong foundation for me in sales. And my dad was in sales, just like your dad was. Like, I'm not, I don't know that he taught me a lot about it, but I had a basic understanding and kind of moral barometer about when I was selling, how I would communicate, and how to talk to people. So I think that's a real
You're right
strong
on the money.
foundation, right?
And honest, it don't and you got to be honest, because one lie, you can tell the truth for 20 years, and if they catch you lying, you're out. Like,
You
you
are.
got
It's
to be
not. It,
honest.
yeah. It's.
Tell the
It's.
truth.
Yeah. There's not a lot of room for failure in that industry. It's like, and it's not even. It even the thing with that is too that if you do lie to somebody, they're not just going to probably keep that to themselves. They're going to tell everybody they know in the furniture industry or medical
Absolutely.
industry or whatever industry it is, and
Small.
you're
Every
dead.
industry is probably the same, but word of mouth
You're
in this
done.
industry is just, it's crazy. It's
Oh
instant.
yeah.
The
Yeah.
grapevine is quick and fast. And
Yeah, and that there is, in retail maybe it's well, in retail I think it's probably the same. I mean, if you make a mistake, like I think for every I forget there was something for every one person that tells you, there's 20 people that didn't tell you, and that's a scary thing, right?
wow. You're
Like
right.
one person tells you, oh, that was a really bad product. There's 20 other people that probably thought the same thing, but they didn't bother to tell you. And nowadays with reviews and online and that, you're probably going to get mashed with it a bit more, but yeah, I thought
In
that was a good
part,
one.
I mean, I was trained. I want a couple points, but I was trained. My dad, I was 19 years old, and I was shy, shy, shy. Really, I was always shy. My dad gave me the keys to his car, his briefcase. And sent gave me directions to, there's no GPS, to a little store in Western Prince Edward Island in O'Leary.
Yeah.
See Vivian McKenna, who's gone, and she was tough, man. She had knee-high stockings, and she was mean, and she was hard. And
Yeah.
he didn't tell me any of that till I got there, and I came
Yeah.
back with an order. And he said,
Yeah.
"Well, that was the toughest call you could make. You got an order. Your training's
Wow.
over. You're good." Now,
Wow.
I was fortunate enough that I worked for my father, so that had a lot of problems, but it gave me a couple of few years to find my way.
Yeah.
I was not a salesman at 19. I had a nice suit dad bought me, and I was trying,
Yeah.
but I was Robert's son, and
Yeah.
people would talk to me like, "Oh, you're Bob's son," but they wanted to talk to Bob, and blah blah. Then my dad had a major accident, and he couldn't work anymore. He was on a Sea-Doo accident, and he broke half his body, and I remember Mike James came down. I'd never met him before, and I talked to him, and I knew Hugh Owen, but just not Mike. And Mike came down when Dad got out of the hospital, had dinner with us. He stayed at this little bed and breakfast. There was no place to stay, and I have found out after that, like, I took over at that point, and I've really been doing it ever since as the lead or solo. But I found out after that Mike wasn't sure he was going to give it to me. He didn't know me that well, didn't know if I could do it. And he told Dad, "Listen, we're going to give him a go and see what happens." And listen, I'll say it, I kicked ass. I did great. Sales were great. I did a good job. I became close with Mike. I close with my customers, and I left my dad's reputation and shadow in the dust, and I made my own way. So, but I had a, I was fortunate enough. People used to always ask me, other people on the sales floor, say, "How do you get to do this job?" And I would say, "Listen, you got to kind of know somebody. It's tough. Like, how do you become a sales agent? I mean, I don't know how to become one of those." And my position doesn't even, it really is stopping. It doesn't exist much anymore. It's a dying breed. There's still sales reps, company men, but to be a commission agent with a few lines, the lines aren't there anymore. It's kind of ending. But it just made me think, though, when we were talking about honesty. I mean, I had a couple of examples. I remember standing there in a line with a few people at the factory one day, and this guy from Newfoundland was listening to everyone's answer. Then he looked at me and said, "Okay, Sean, I've heard them. Now, can you tell me the truth?" And I'm looking at everybody like, "What do you mean? Why are you asking me that?" Like, I not in front of everybody. And I remember Hugh Owen sat down with Rob Northrup, the best and toughest buyer down here owned a Leon store, a big one. And we used to sell him a brand called Restonic. And at the end of Restonic, it was garbage. I'm sorry, but it was. I don't think there's anything in them anymore, you know. So they the retailers had to bring a bunch of them back.
Right.
So we're sitting there with a new line, me and Dad and Hugh Owen, and we're trying to sell them Kingstown. And Rob Northlup looked at Hugh Owen and said, Hugh, after the end of Restonic, why would I possibly bring in something else you're selling? Why would I trust you? And Big Huey stood there, and Big Huey could sell anything to anybody.
Oh my gosh,
he said, you know what? He said, you're right. He said, I'll give you a year completely straight, but then after that, you're on your own. How about that? And we left with an order. And I'm like, who else could say that and get away with it? Like, it was insanity. I'm going to throw in one more quick example about trusting people. And that a lot of that happened because Rob trusted Dad. That's why I'll give Dad credit. That's why that went through. Dad and me took on Daewoo Electronics. I don't know if they're even around anymore.
I remember it,
And they were a Korean line. And we had been with LG in the past. We took on Daewoo for Newfoundland. And we walked into Cohen's. And the buyer said, Daewoo. He said, 1 minute. Called the owner. The owner came down and said, we're not buying Daewoo. They still owe us money from last time around. I can't believe you'd walk in my office if you'd have done your homework. You'd have never come in here. And we're getting just like hammered. Like, oh, this was a mistake. They owe us money. The crap, blah, blah, blah. This went on for an hour, Chris.
Right.
We left with an order.
Wow.
Just kept taking the shit and just kept going back. Yeah, but it's different this time. Yeah, but we're going to stand behind it this time. Yeah, but we'll help you with your credits. Yeah, but. And then they went, well, okay. All right. We'll give
I
it
think, exclusive. Yeah, there's a couple things that I take from what you were just saying. Resiliency is a big one. Like you need to be resilient. It's like you're tap dancing sometimes, right?
Absolutely. Skating.
You know, people, you're going to show up with one idea in your head. And then all of a sudden, like, you're going to get like rapid fire shots and you're like, okay, how do I respond to that? So there is certainly something to be said if you are in fact in sales, like you need to be on your toes. You need to be sharp. You need to be quick thinking. You need to have answers, but again, honest answers. And, you know, if you, at the end of the day, if you don't know the answer, I think saying, I don't know, let me find out is a good spin on that.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about Big Huey was the sun's come out. I just like, anyway, that when I was thinking about Big Huey, like the one thing, like, I mean, God rest his soul, but he was a bull in a china shop, right?
He's still alive though.
Oh yeah. No, I couldn't say that. You're wrong. That was the wrong.
No, I knew what you meant.
God bless him. He was a bull in a china shop, but there's something to be said for charisma, of course, right? And the first time I met you, like, I thought you were very charismatic. We've talked about this story, right? You were tall, you were a big guy, you had this presence, you had this voice. And you know, that certainly is not something you can teach somebody. Like, you can't teach charisma, right? So it doesn't matter what sales course you're taking. And I'm not saying that that's a reason why you shouldn't, you know, get into sales, but, you know, check some boxes and make sure that that is something that you have. Like, it's important, right?
I'm a big David Bowie. You know, Modern Love by David Bowie. The first words he says, it's not really work. It's just the power to charm.
that's a great line. Yeah,
that is.
Yeah, for sure.
A long way with charm. My wife always said that when we were kids, people are, well, how'd you got pregnant? And he said, well, he hit a lot of charm, man. Charmed the pants right off of me, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, knowing the product and being honest and you know, being communicative, being resilient, these are all aspects of it. But there is something to be said for a bit of charisma and you know, showing up. I mean, that's the other thing. You got to show up in a positive way, right? You know, we're all going to have days where you're just like, oh my God, like, but you got to show up and it's the old fake it till you make it. Like, just, you got to show up with a smile. You got to bring the coffees. You got to bring the snacks. You got to, like, you do the little things that.
You got to leave the shit in the car. I don't care if you're fighting with your wife,
Yeah.
you're in a bad mood, or you're not feeling good. You know, when you walk through the door, it's just like, hey, how's it going? Does it, you know,
Yeah.
how's
Yeah.
everybody? And you got to talk to every salesperson and you make your way to the office, and you got to be
Yeah.
positive and happy,
Yeah.
and you
You
can't.
do. You do. You do. And I suppose that's the same in any job. I mean, you do, like, you kind of gotta, like, switch gears when it comes to getting in, showing up.
And you got to take responsibility. You know, I've made a long time in my life. When I make a mistake,
Yeah.
I do it to this day. I'll email the customer back and say, oh, that's on me. I screwed
Yeah.
that up. I will fix it. I apologize. And you know, every time I do that, I get the answer back. No problem, Sean. I appreciate it.
100%. Oh,
But
yeah,
if you start
follow.
blaming and skating and shifting, oh, I don't know what happened. Someone else did it. I don't know. It's a big mistake. Oh, the world fell down. The sky was
No,
off. The power was off. Just man
nobody
up,
cares.
take it and go.
Yeah, nobody cares. Follow through is huge for sure, right? And I think, actually, if I were to, like, recommend something, like a course or something that people could take, if they were gonna, it's more about, like, ethics. And again, if we're talking about, like, chivalrous, it's like, it's and my ex-father-in-law, he used to teach. I can't. I'm having trouble putting my finger on the word, but it was about. It was about follow through. It was about, like, like little things, like sending an email to somebody, just sort of saying, thank you for the conversation. Thank you for, whatever. Maybe they gave you some feedback. And it was really just that, like, follow up to, like, not just going there for the meeting and having the meeting, but then also, like, a bit of a follow up. Hey, it was great to meet you. Thank you for that order. Just, like, some almost gratitude, really. Like,
I say thank you for every time I get an order to this day. I don't care.
yeah.
I have people that send the order directly to the company and they copy me, but every time I email back, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks.
I
Thanks.
mean, yeah, your salary's on the line, so it's like, if you're not following up and being grateful for that, you're there's an op there there's a possibility that that relationship is gonna, go downhill. Like, you really just kind of need to keep the gas pedal down, don't you? Like, you need to, like, make
You
sure
do.
you're going. I guess what I'm saying is, you're doing that little extra, like, you're going the extra mile, right?
Absolutely. You got to stay in contact, make sure they're okay. And you can't think, okay, well, they know me. If there's a problem, they'll let me know. No,
Yeah.
it's not the case. If you're not paying attention, you'll walk in one day and your product will be gone and someone else's be there. And you'll say,
Yeah.
well, why wouldn't you tell me there was a problem? We could have fixed it. And he goes, well, I don't know, you
You
weren't here. I got a million other things to do, man. And you got to remember, in any job, even if you're on the floor, sales I'm talking about, there's a bunch of other people doing it too. So, yeah,
100%.
you
Yeah.
walk in, you do your thing. Well, yeah, there's 10 other guys that are doing the same thing, man.
And
And
you have no idea how they're doing it, for the most part, right?
right, absolutely.
Yeah, and it leads me to something that just now that I was thinking about, and this is that fine line between business relationships and becoming friends with your customers. Like, there can be a dynamic there where it can, you get a little closer to them, maybe you consider them a friend, but I think my philosophy was always, like, I'm willing to listen to any, like, personal stuff, because it's amazing how, when you do gain that trust and you have that relationship with somebody over years, how they begin to confide in you,
Absolutely.
right? It can be a little bit easier to confide in someone that you're not super close with, that you just really, maybe that day you want to get something off your chest and they want to confide in you, right? I mean, I'm sure, like, you've heard a lot of things over the years from customers. I mean, we don't want to get into that, because
Course,
that
no,
would
I won't, but it'll
be,
blow your mind.
you have for sure, and so have I, right? Things that, like, and sometimes even really early on in the relationship, you're like,
Really
wow,
early on.
you leave and you're like, I can't believe that person just told me
But
that.
it's the charm. It's the way we've trained to connect with people, and you make an early connection. And
Yeah.
I didn't figure it out, but I know I developed a long time ago a way to lead a conversation to get people to start talking, right? And
Yeah,
the longer
yeah.
you let someone talk,
Yeah.
What they'll say. I remember being at a store, and I won't mention names, but I was with David Kahn. He was my sales manager from
Yeah.
Ontario. We left that store, and he said, "Is there anything that people won't tell you?"
Yeah.
Like he said,
Yeah.
we
It's
sat there
true.
for an hour, and the stuff that man told you. And this
It's
guy's
amazing.
from Ontario, and he said, "I'm used to walking in, and you say hello, and then you go, well, what about this product, this product, this product, blah,
Yeah.
blah, this price,
Yeah.
and you leave." He said, "We were there an hour talking about his family and his life and his problems and his stuff,
Yeah.
and then
Yeah.
it all
Yeah.
worked out. We were doing great, but that's the relationship. I have a small customer base. I have a small population down here. I deal with the big guys, the important guys, and I
Yeah.
consider, I'm not just saying this because they might hear this podcast someday. They are my friends. I've made a couple mistakes. My addiction led to a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
I was not looking the best. I was not acting the best. I was an addict. I was a mess, right? I was this close to death. And I remember sitting with Rob Northrup in his office, and he closed the door. And I've known this man since I was 13,
Yeah.
and he's my biggest customer. And he said, "Sean, what's going on, man?" I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "This is like what? You've canceled a couple appointments. You're
Yeah.
here. You don't have the answers. You kind of look disheveled. You're not." And I started crying my eyes out.
Wow.
A lot of people would have took offense and like, "Screw you, I'm a grown man." But
Yeah.
I didn't have it in me. Like I needed help. Like I
That's
was
good.
crying. I had to leave his office. I said, "I'll be back," and I apologized. And he knew something was wrong. I didn't come clean that day, but it wasn't much longer.
Yeah.
And when I got clean and went to detox, I came out. I emailed every one of my customers and my owners, including Mike and a bunch of people, and said,
Yeah.
"I've been an addict for this many years. I
Yeah.
apologize for what I've done. I'm going to
Yeah.
try to do better." And
Yeah.
I don't think I got, there was one girl it didn't matter, said something I didn't like. Every other person emailed me back and said, "Oh my God, Sean, why didn't you tell us? We would have helped you. We would have got you with, we would have paid for detox. We'd have done this. We'd have done that." They were a blessing. But again, I'm not talking about my addiction today, but again, it goes to those were the relationships I built, and I
Yeah.
told them the truth. And
Yeah.
I didn't say, "Oh, I was sick," or "I wasn't feeling good," or "I was depressed. I was an addict. This is what I did."
Laid it out.
It just, if I hadn't built those relationships, they wouldn't have cared less. I mean, they would
Right.
just been like, whatever, too bad, so sad.
Yeah.
But they stuck with me. Mike
Yeah.
stood with me.
Yeah.
I lost a couple lines before that, but I hadn't been honest yet. So
Right.
they just thought I wasn't working. They knew something was wrong. They couldn't figure it out, but I wasn't telling people the truth. So I should have been honest. But we talked about addiction. Addiction's a whole other thing. But
Yeah.
I'm just talking about my personal journey. It kind of played into each other, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And going back to that, going back to the honesty and like how, it's business versus friendship kind of relationships. They will tend to, I mean, I think over time they will meld a bit, right? But I think where I was sort of trying to go with it is, when there is a relationship like that where it is honest, it is healthy, it's communicative, people start telling you their own stuff, right? I think that's a great thing. But I would always caution anyone who is in fact in sales to kind of leave your, I mean, your example, of course, was necessary for you to tell them about it. But I would always kind of tend to leave my own stuff out of those conversations.
You're right.
Only unless maybe it was relevant where I could offer at least some personal advice based on an experience that I may have had that might bring that person a bit of, insight. But I mean, I'm not a therapist, I'm not an expert. I'm here to sell. That's what I'm doing. But I've certainly met people, I'm sure you have too, that go that they're selling, but they're not, they're talking a lot about themselves versus listening to others. And that goes to what you said at the beginning. Listen first, talk less or talk later, whatever, right? Just kind of like keep things, there's always going to be a little, there's going to be a check-in. Here I'm check-in, how you doing, how's it going, da da da. There may be some sharing, but then it's like we're here to do business at the end of the day. I'm here to, sell you on a product. And so I would caution anyone to sort of not bring their own stuff into those,
Yeah, it's a
you know.
fine line. I
Yeah. It is.
you make friends, so then friends might expect you to be a little bit open with them. But I've made that mistake. I will admit it. I've been too open. And when I'm not, when I was, I've suffered from depression, and somebody will say, "How you are? How are you?" And the answer should be fine. And I'll be, "Well, now
You
that you've
mentioned this, yeah,
asked."
you mentioned this on
And
another podcast,
the
and you're like,
person's sitting there
oh,
going,
actually, here's what's going on. 30 minutes later, they're just like, okay, sorry
okay, I
to
wish I'd never asked you that question.
ask.
And I'm sitting there going, I wish I had kept my mouth shut. And I go home and regret it. But it hasn't
Well,
happened a lot.
that's a good lesson, though, right?
It is.
Obviously.
And learn from your lessons. We're going to sound like we're preaching,
Absolutely.
but learn from your lessons, man. If you've made a mistake, whatever, chalk it down and try not to do it again, you know?
And again, learning from your lessons, when you see other salespeople doing something, when you go to a sales meeting and you're taking in information, there were things. I mean, we did that, like that penny test that you did. I did that for months after that, not years, right? So there's all these little things like you're not, absorb stuff, like you're a chameleon. Just like you're going to be, you need to be constantly, growing and changing and
35
evolving.
years I've done the same job, and I will go hear like a motivational speaker, or you said listen to peers and that, and I never will sit there and go, oh well, they're not going to teach me nothing. Like, come on, I listen. And I just did a, we just did a Zoom sales meeting, and I'm not kidding. I wrote down a bunch of notes from younger guys that have been in less time than me, but I thought, you know what? That makes sense. That makes sense. And if I spend 5 hours and I learn two things, it's 5 hours well spent for sure.
It is. Yeah, and you're always going to take those tidbits. And like, again, I get basically what we're saying is you're be open-minded. Like, if you've got a certain technique, that's great, but you can't just rest on that and do that for the rest of your sales career. It's not like people, everybody's evolving.
Which leads to a comment that I want to make sure I say before we stop is I keep going back to my mistakes, which I tried. I promised myself I wouldn't do this week. You'd sent me a comment from a friend of yours, which I honestly appreciated. I took it as a compliment.
I figured you would, and that's good.
I really thought about what he said, and I do that too much, but it comes from a place I am right now. I'm a little. I'm suffering from some depression. I'm trying to stop. You've tried to coax me out of that, which I appreciate. But it's not something I can just snap my fingers. But
No.
I have made the mistake, and I've watched my dad make this mistake, and a lot of people make mistakes. You get on the road for years, you do a good job, you make lots of friends, you have good lines, you become trustworthy, likable, all that stuff. And then you have some problems. I'd never say with me I ever got lazy because I'm not lazy. I had some health issues, but you can't rest on your laurels. You cannot do it. Your laurels will keep you in the game for a bit. If you run into a snag and you're off your game for a while, your friends will stick with you for a while because they love you. And then they will move on. And it's not because they don't like or love you, it's because they have a business to run. They have a business to run. Love is. Business is business and love is bullshit. And my father taught me that a long time ago. Business is business and love is bullshit because in business, because they need to sell product. They need product they can sell that'll keep the lights on in their store and keep their drivers driving and their salespeople selling and their houses lit. We are all in this to, we're in this to make money in the long run. And it's great that we can do it with people we like. And it's great that we can get lifelong friends and have great things happen in our life because it is your life. It is my life. I want to be friends with these people. It's my life. But in the end, man, it's business. It's business. It's and like I said, your laurels will keep you going for a little bit, but you've got to be important. Sales is a very noble profession. And I'm not just saying
Good
that because
or
I'm a lifelong salesman. Do you know
it
that
is.
nothing happens on this planet without salesmen? Without salesmen, you don't have clothes, you don't have furniture, you don't have cars, you don't have TVs, you don't have internet, you don't have cell phones. Somebody has sold that product to somebody and they've sold it to you. Salesmen make the world move, man. We're more important than lawyers and doctors and ministers. No, I'm just kidding. No, we do. It's important. So it's a noble profession, but got to, and it's nice that we can be friends in it, and it's nice that we can do all that stuff. But you've got to, it's a big process to make a product go from overseas to your house, or from Canada to your house, or wherever. It's a there's a lot of people for manufacturing and truckers and all this management and accountants, but you've got to find a spot to insert yourself in that big circle of movement and make sure that you're in there and that you're important and you're vital and you're helping move the thing along. And if you're not doing that, you're just not going to be there. You've got to be important. You've got to literally be important.
No, and I was looking down for a moment. I was listening, but I wanted to look up rest on your laurels, because I mean, we know what it means. But listen to this: if someone is resting on their laurels, they appear to be satisfied with the things they have achieved and have stopped putting effort into what they are doing.
Holy shit!
Yeah, right. So
wow.
Yeah, it's like,
do it again. And you know, I know I do this to you a lot, but read it to me again.
They appear to be satisfied with the things they have achieved and have stopped putting effort into what they are doing. And you know what? You know what this immediately reminded me of? It was my dad said to me when we bought the business. He said, "If sales aren't growing, then we might as well be going backwards. Because if everybody else is growing, if you aren't growing along with them, and this is probably a pretty good life lesson moment right here. If we're getting close to the end, it's like, if you're not growing, you're moving backwards, right?
You're growing or you're going, man.
And that is,
Hugh Owen taught me that. I go back to Huey. I remember when Hugh Owen started expanding, we started in a little factory and I was there. There was 18 of them and me, no one noticed me. I was a sub rep, but I was there.
Yeah.
And we had a little factory, and we kept knocking on walls, and then we bought the building beside us, and we'd walk across the parking lot to get to the side. And then he built a building. And I remember talking to Mike. I was close to Mike at the time, and he was saying, this building is way bigger than it should be. And then we bought one at West, and we just kept, but Hugh Owen understood that we had to keep growing or we weren't going to make it. You got to keep. And he would think big. He would prepare for the future. Yeah, it's too big now. And these factories that we thought were too big, we outgrew them. We outgrew them in a few years. Yeah. Then we needed a bigger factory. It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that I'm just kind of taking from this is that, you know, it's okay to show up. You know, obviously we talked about honesty. We talked about follow through. We talked about resilience. I think the other thing is really, that's really important. And this one can be missed, is listening, like really, really listening. You know, I think we can often like walk in with our own concepts of things, and have our own philosophies, but if we're not listening and paying attention, then we're going to miss stuff, and we're not going to provide, you know, people with really what they're looking for. And so that's kind of like, if you're just kind of doing the in one ear and out the other thing, then that's probably not going to work in the long run, you know.
I didn't hear any of that. What were you saying?
Good one. Oh,
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely
right.
And always be a smart ass. That's important, to always be a smart ass. And I've got that one down
pat. Yeah, you're spot on there.
No, you're absolutely right. Listening, because I'm glad you said that, because you do go in thinking, this is my plan.
Yeah.
But most of the times those plans get changed.
Yeah.
And you might think, oh, this guy's going to take these three products because these are all amazing. And he looks at them and goes, nah. And you're like, oh, what?
Right. Exactly.
Everybody took those. No, not for me. And I'm like, oh, man. Like,
right. What? Yeah.
But you got to be able to skate. You got to be able to change on the spot and go with the flow. And if that's not working out, change your plan quickly and go with his plan. Do what you got to do. You know, convince him. You got to be convincing.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, don't take yourself. I don't think yourself too seriously. Don't let you know, because there's going to be criticism too in it. I mean, you're going to make mistakes, and you know. Like you say, tap dancing a little, making sure that you're resilient, you know.
And the little things, before we go, like make sure you make an appointment. Make sure you're on time for the appointment. Don't cancel.
Yeah.
Don't waste their time if they don't have the time. And the wait. I've waited. I'll have 9 o'clock appointment. It starts at 11. It gets there at 11. I don't complain. I sit there going, no, it's all good, man. Like you're there.
Yeah.
You're on their time. And it's tough, especially when you're someone like us, you work with me the way I am still, Mike James said this. He's always sports analogies, but he told me one time, he said, it's a tough gig, man. You never play a home game. And he's right. You're always at the
You're
their
on the road.
it's always away, man. You're in someone else's office. It's not, I'm never on, once a year I used to have a show, I'd be on my turf, but never. I'm always in someone else's office, in their space, and they're comfortable, and you're sitting there trying to, do your thing. I used to get in trouble. I'm thinking of Mike. He used to get mad at me because he knew I was going to do it. And he said, this is a saying a lot of people know, but he told me, he learned it from me, as I always said, well, it's easier to beg forgiveness than ask permission. And he hated that about me because I would do it. And then I'd go home and I'd be trying to talk him into it. And he'd be like, and then he'd finally go, did you already do this? And I'd say, yeah. He goes, well, what the fuck then? What are we doing? Fine, go do it. But
I mean, my philosophy is sort of like, if it's a 9 a.m. meeting, you're there at 8:50. Like
absolutely.
show up on time. If you're on time, you're late, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
And yeah, you could be sitting there for 2 hours waiting for somebody because something's come up, and you could easily start like getting completely pissed, like what is this, like all that, and like completely ruin it. Or maybe it's an opportunity to get out, like if in our case where we were on the floors, get out and talk to people on the floor,
Sure.
whatever,
Go to the
or
service department.
email, whatever. Just like
Absolutely. Make sure your
don't
boss
let
gets
that kind
paid.
of, you could easily let that fester and completely blow it. Or you can just like, yeah, go with the flow. It's a lot of go with the flow when you're out on the road, especially. Like you
And
got
everybody's
to pivot
different.
a little bit.
I think it's different in Ontario. I think the calls are shorter and more often. I don't have as many calls. I don't have as many stores, but I spend a lot of time in my stores. So if I go to St. John's, say I'm a one customer for the day half the time. Like I know that walking in, I gotta see the salespeople, the sales manager, the buyer, the service manager, the owner, the accountant. I mean, I say hi to everybody, the store manager, the guys in the warehouse. You talk to everybody and you know everybody. And it's important to know everybody. I'm losing my voice. It's important to know everybody because maybe someday there's something that's going to happen on the truck, and that truck driver might do you a favor because he knows you and says, oh, that's Sean's product. We should get this. So who knows? It doesn't hurt.
That's you're touching every aspect of it there for sure, right?
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
I realized that the course that my ex-father-in-law taught, it was a course on etiquette.
Oh, interesting.
And I mean, being the chivalrous guys, etiquette—it's changing. Maybe not for the better, but yeah, it was all about, like showing up. Obviously, trim your beard. Wear something nice. Wear some, kind of like, and shake the hand, look in the eye, all that stuff, right?
And we're fortunate. You don't have to wear suits anymore. Like,
You don't. No,
you still
no.
gotta look nice, but you don't have to
You
wear
do.
it.
You
When
do.
I started in the road, I had to wear a suit and tie like every day, like
For
everywhere I
sure.
went.
For
And
sure.
I hated wearing suits and ties. I was a big guy. It was uncomfortable. I didn't like it. And I used to push the envelope and I wouldn't wear them to shows and I would get in trouble. And I always wore my hair really long and shaggy. And but you know what? I didn't really do that until I was comfortable enough to do it, and people took me as I was. I remember Mike bothered me about it one time, and I said, "Oh, you're just jealous. I got so much hair." And he said, "Yeah, you're right. Whatever." But I could get away with it because we were friends, and I got away with it. But I, the same guy Rob, I remember in his office, I was listening to him. He was talking to his manager, and they were interviewing for a new person on the floor, and they're saying, "How's he look? Is his hair above his collar? What's he? Does he? Does he have a beard? Does he smoke? Blah 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 blah." And went through the whole thing. And I said, "Well, I guess I'm not getting a job here." I take the wrong box on every one of those. And he goes, you're right, they're not getting a job here. But anyway,
Yeah,
whatever.
times are changing a little on that, which is kind of nice. Yeah, if you showed up at a with a suit and a tie, people would be like, "What are you like in the 80s? Where you're right? You felt
Absolutely.
like
Are you
outdated."
sick? You dying? Did you come from a funeral? What's going on?
Exactly.
But no,
So
it's
that's
all
nice.
good. But you know what? This was my voice is not good today, but this was a fun podcast. I like this one.
I hope we added, a few tidbits. We do between us, I think, probably have like 60 or 70 years in sales. So I
Unfortunately, but
certainly been doing it a long time, and it is really, there's a lot of it to be said for selling yourself first, for being honest, as we talked about, for showing up, listening for sure, showing up on time, as we said, or early.
My
And
friend
there's a lot to it. It's not a simple thing to do.
It's not.
And it takes it takes some confidence for sure, and it takes some charisma, as we talked about. So
it takes some time. Give yourself a little grace if you're new. It takes a bit. It doesn't happen overnight, and you'll make mistakes, but you'll find your way. You know,
and I think, you know, as we said, like, learn from others in the beginning until you find your own little groove, right? We all have to find our own niche, right?
Be humble. And the first, especially, be humble, be honest. And if you're humble and honest and kind and trustworthy and all that stuff, people will give you a little leeway. They will let
Absolutely.
You find your way. You know, they're not going to expect
Absolutely.
Everything, but if you go in there at the start and even at the end and pretend you know everything and you're belligerent. And I don't want to pick on Ontario guys. It's not as bad as it used to be, but I used to have some sales managers from Upper Canada come down here, and they were going to show us how it was, right? And they'd go in that door and they'd blah, blah, blah. And I would literally, this is the truth. I would get a call from my buyer as soon as I left and say, "Don't you ever bring that guy in my store again, ever." And it's my boss.
This is knowing your customer, right? I mean, you would totally agree if I said, like, people on the East Coast, they're much more easygoing. They're kind of like, they're, you know, it's more about kind of relationships. And whereas here in Ontario, it's rush, 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 rush. Like, it's Toronto. It's like, okay, don't waste my time. It's like, so you again, that's an understanding of the customer, understanding what they're like. And even, you know, with a lot of my stores, when I was working with Kingstown too, like, there was just so many different types of people. You had to, like, you really had to be a chameleon to switch what worked in one store isn't going to work in another one.
Oh, of course not. No,
right?
Of course
no not. Chance. So, yeah,
it's an interesting profession. It's a tough profession. And this is my last advice for sure.
Yeah.
Make sure we have to exude so much charm, and we got to be liked by everybody, and we want to be loved by everybody, and we do all this all week. But make sure you save a little bit for home as well. I don't travel as much as I used to. I'm okay saying that. I still travel, but not as much as I used to. I used to go Monday to Friday, sometimes Monday to Saturday, and I would be out there, and I would come home. And I heard about this years ago. You can have what they call a smile quota. So you've literally run out of smiles for the week. And I would get home exhausted, feeling sorry for myself. Like, say, why the fuck do I got to be away all the time? I miss this with the kids, and you're home, and blah, 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 blah. And I'd be pissy with my wife, and I'd be missing her so much. And I couldn't wait to see her, and I'd be thinking about, having fun with her. And I loved her. And then I come home, and we'd be in a fight within 2 minutes. Because of me. And I never took the time to respect the fact that she'd been home all week alone by herself with the kids, and she missed me. And she's got a hard life, lots going on. And I remember one time she said to me, she said, "How come your customers get all these niceties from you, and all I get is this bullshit?"
Right.
And she was 100% right. She was just getting leftovers, you know?
Yeah, so it's
gotta be careful.
Yeah, it's all about the balance. If I took, I think probably one of the best things that my dad ever told me, the best advice he gave me is, you know, make sure you find a good work-life balance. You know, like, you got to enjoy the time with your family, the time with yourself, or, you know, but work isn't everything. It's not. It's important to do, of course, but sometimes you get home, you've been talking all day long, and it's like, you just want to kind of close your mouth and not have to do it. But the reality is, you know, obviously your work is important, but your home relationship is more important at the end of the day. But
life is hard. And that's why I know you've been divorced. I was an addict for 14 years. Life gets tough, and things don't go the way we want them all the time. But, but then you know, you're 54 and you're doing a podcast and all is well.
That's right. That's right. Enjoy the now, my friend. Enjoy
yes, sir. Well, listen, I'm so glad we got to do this. I can't tell you how much I look forward to Wednesday mornings. It's
That's
insane.
Fun. Me too. It seems like it's going really fast now. It's like,
I know.
We start prepping on Sundays and Mondays, talking about it, and it's like, boom, here we are. So it's good.
It's crazy. But anyway, happy Father's Day. I know
it's coming up.
You got a couple of boys there that you think of as your sons, and then
yeah, We did Stepfather's Day, so we Stepfather's Day is the week after, but I appreciate it.
Cool, cool.
Happy Father's Day for sure to you and to your dad too. He is still your father to my dad, who God rest his soul, because
Absolutely.
to all the dads out there, happy Father's Day coming up. That's
Bookman, a Jets fan. What is it? A bookman, a Jets fan? What was it?
good friend. Oh no, it's escaping. That's too bad.
I know it's Bookman and Jets fan.
Bookman, good friend, family man, good friend, and Jets fans. I think that's it, something like that.
Yeah,
But yeah,
I
that's
think it
right.
was Books and Jets anyway. It's
Yeah,
cool.
well, that's for
I
sure.
I'm really happy this weekend. I'm going. I gotta go to Halifax today as soon as I'm done for work, but I'm seeing one of my oldest son, so I'm happy for that. And then
That's
this
perfect.
weekend I'm gonna see my youngest son and his wife. We're gonna play some Catan, which I enjoy doing, so I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great, man.
All right. Well, I'm sure I'll be talking to you, and
Yeah, for sure.
I'll put a little bit of music on again for a second, and then I'll turn it off and we'll move on.
All right. Love you, brother.
Love you too, man. And one of these days, I'm going to actually not make a mistake.
Awkward silence.
I need an assistant. You like this song?
They don't need a man who's got it made. Always looking for that renegade. I calls it like I sees it. A spade is a spade. A good man is a thing of yesterday. Yeah. They don't want them a good man who will hold his heart out in his hand. They don't need them a good man. No matter where he stands, they just don't give a damn. No matter how much it hurts, they always go back to make it work. Baby, he won't treat you better, just worse.
We might have a theme song. I like it.
I like it too. That's
All
great,
right.
man.
Take
Love
care.
you. Bye.
Love you.